Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, mama, I'm in fear for my life from the long arm of the law.
Got miles to go before we sleep.
Lawman is putting an end to my running, and I'm so far from my
home. We will not go gently. We're going to unleash hell here in December.
Oh, mama, I can hear you a-crying. You're so scared and all alone.
Hey, somebody fix this guy's buckle. Hey, let me play football.
I'm coming down from the gallows, and I don't have very long.
Ladies and gentlemen of Steeler Nation, welcome back to another edition of the BehindTheSteelCurtain.com podcast. The standard is the standard. Have a lot to talk about today. We're going to talk AFC playoff scenarios. We're going to talk Brandon Boykin, obviously. We're going to talk about the Broncos, and it's Ravens Hate Week here at BehindTheSteelCurtain.com. And with me, as always, is my co-host, Lance Williams. How you doing this evening, Lance?
I'm doing fantastic. Jeff, want to take this small time out to wish all the listeners out there a happy holidays and a happy new year.
Absolutely. We hope everyone has a safe holiday. If you're traveling, be safe on the roads, or if you're flying somewhere, we hope you find your destination safely, and we hope you have a great holiday season. And we hope that that is somehow tied in with the Pittsburgh Steelers as they come off a ridiculously improbable win on Sunday in Week 15 against the Denver Broncos, coming back from a 17-point deficit to win 34-27. Lance, we didn't get to talk last week. You weren't able to join us. Neil Coolong, former editor of BTSE, was on with us. I want to get your overall feel of the game, how you thought it went, and really just your thoughts in general about the Steelers after that game, moving forward, all that good stuff.
That was the ultimate Jekyll and Hyde game. Depending on how you look at the Pittsburgh Steelers, if you look at them from the perspective of the glass is half empty versus the half is glass. Excuse me, the glass is half full. That game gave you enough ammunition on either side to make very credible arguments. At their best, they can beat anybody. At their worst, which is what we saw in the first half, they can lose to anybody. But the one thing we do know about this football team is that offense is supernatural. It's electric. They put numbers on everybody. And if the pass protection is solid, they're going to score. So we know that about this team. And the other thing, you know, listening to the comments of Mike Tomlin, and a lot of people like to put a lot of credence into halftime adjustments, but I really agree with him in this case. They just played better football, and the defensive line got hot in the second half, and you kind of saw momentum build, and there was a crescendo there, and they just kind of took over that game, and they won it. I don't know if they would have been able to do the same on the road. I'm sure the road crowd helped build some of that momentum and that energy in that building. But, you know, they'll kill you. They'll give you a heart attack, this football team. So I would advise, if we're going to watch this team the rest of the way, you know, get your heart medicine, because you will definitely have palpitations.
Hey, I've been saying that for years. I've always said that I'm only 32 years old, but I said one day the Pittsburgh Steelers are going to kill me. Well, I don't know when. I'm going to be watching the game. I'm going to keel over of a heart attack, and they're going to be the end of me. But still, it was an incredible win. And you talk about the offense. I mean, I think people sometimes have got – I feel like they've almost gotten dumbed down a little bit. You Pittsburgh Steelers score 30 points, and people are like, oh, well, that's just 30 points, you know. That's 30 points, people. If you think back to the training camp when Todd Haley and Ben Roethlisberger set that goal of, okay, we are going to have the goal for every single game be 30 points. People laughed at it. I think you and I on this show said that that's not possible. That's a lofty goal. That we almost laughed at it. And look where they are now. Six games in a row scoring over 30. And these are not chump defenses they're playing either. There were some softies in there, Cleveland, Indianapolis. But they've played some really tough defenses. I'm talking Cincinnati. I'm talking Seattle. I'm talking Denver. And they hung it up on every single one of those teams. So I'll tell you what, this offense is lethal. And they are clicking on all cylinders at the right time. And it's fun to watch. I mean, if you like watching offense, if you like watching teams overcome adversity, that's what I see when I look at this offense. With no Le'Veon Bell, D'Angelo Williams is stepping up and playing unbelievable football. You lose your starting left tackle. You don't have your all-pro center. You make do. I mean, you watched that. I know you watched that Denver Broncos game in the All-22. There were times where the Broncos brought the house, and they stood their ground and gave Ben a pocket. And you're going to surrender some sacks against a team like Denver. And I thought they did a tremendous job. If you're going to give a game ball, Lance, to one or two or however many people you want to after that game, who are some of the players that you're going to give a game ball to?
On the offensive side of football, it has to go to Antonio Brown. I mean, what he did to Chris Harris Jr. Is not something, even for a player as good as Antonio Brown, you don't expect that. You know, Harris Jr. is one of the top-rated corners on PFF. You know, he's a guy that hasn't given up a touchdown pass in years. And he's a premier corner in the National Football League. In fact, the team has three of them. Roby's really good. And Aqib Talib is one of the top five corners in the NFL, along with Sherman, Patrick Peterson, Revis, and Josh Norman. So to see AB put those type of numbers up against a cornerback as good as Harris Jr., you just have to give the guy the game ball. I think he was targeted 18 times, had 16 receptions, two touchdowns, the game-winning touchdown. AB is just a fantastic player, and he just might be the best wide receiver in the National Football League. On the defensive side of football, I'd have to give game balls to Hayward and Tuitt. They got hot in the second half. They really turned it up with the pressures and the physicality and really getting after Osweiler in the second half. And I would have to give those guys the defensive game balls. When they're rolling, that defense plays pretty well. It plays at a level, I believe, in which they can win a championship.
It's tough to disagree with you. I mean, there were a lot of players worthy of the game ball distinction. And Antonio Brown, I mean, it's fun to watch him play. It really is. And it's a pleasure to see him in a black and gold uniform, that's for sure, because I would not want to have him on the opposite team going against any of the Steelers. Now, we have a few callers that were on hold here. If you do want to call in, you can. Phone lines are open 347-850-8581. Again, 347-850-8581. If you're on hold for a little bit, be patient. We'll get to you. And let's hear what you have to say. Let's get our first caller here on the air. We have 413-475. So we're on with Jeff and Lance. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. How's it going tonight?
Going great. Happy holidays to you.
Well, I just wanted to say thanks for the show. I really appreciate it. I started listening at the beginning of the season, and I've been listening pretty much every day. I get up in the morning, I go on the bus ride to school, so I just want to say thanks for that.
Thank you for listening.
No problem, man. Thank you.
All right, so I got a couple of questions for you guys tonight. First of all, out of the remaining two games, I realize that we're probably pretty heavy favorites, at least by a touchdown, I would imagine. Which one of the games scares you guys the most for a trap game?
I would think Baltimore personally, because I think Baltimore is better defensively. I think because it's more of a rivalry game at this point than the Cleveland game, and because of Harbaugh, I think Baltimore is going to sell out to spoil the Steeler chances. So I think of the two, I think, you know, the Baltimore game is going to be the more difficult one.
Yeah, to echo that sentiment, I would say Baltimore. Although Cleveland, up in Cleveland, is not a gimme, but that team's just in shambles. I mean, Baltimore at least has if some players still on their team that you think, you know, the situation, the coach, like Lance just alluded to, the fact that the Steelers could clinch a playoff spot on their home turf at M&T Bank Stadium this Sunday, there's some motivation there for them. Are they good enough to win? I don't think so. The Steelers currently are anywhere from 9.5 to 11.5 point favorites in this game, but I would say that definitely the Baltimore game would be the trap game, if you want to say that.
I would mostly agree with you, but the thing that scares me about Cleveland is that last time we played them, yeah, I know we won by, 20 plus points, something like that. But Johnny Manziel did throw for 380 yards on us. So that scares me just a bit, but I don't think that he has enough weapons to really, really mount as a force against the Steelers defense.
To that, I'll say, if we're worried about Johnny Manziel, this is not a championship football team. They'll be able to handle Johnny. You keep Johnny in the pocket, and you beat Johnny. A lot of those yards were garbage yards. They were really in control of that game. Keep Johnny in the pocket. You control Johnny. You handle the Cleveland Browns. And Cleveland's the type of team where everybody, I believe, is out in Cleveland. Petton's going to be gone. I wouldn't be surprised they have a new general manager. The bags are packed. The packing vans are packed. They have their tickets. They want to get out of town as soon as possible in the last game of the season. There's no incentive for them. So that's the game. If the Steelers go ahead and handle their business on Sunday and win, they're going to absolutely put foot the ass to the Browns in the last game of the season.
All right, my second question is, well, I read an article on Behind the Steel Curtain that said about the Steelers still having a shot at the second seed, which it did surprise me, but, you know, at the same time, crazier things have happened. So let's say we win in Baltimore and the Jets lose to New England, which would mean we would clinch a playoff spot, and everything goes accordingly for us to get the number two seed, do we rest our starters in week 17 against the Browns, like Ben and Antonio and the really important guys in the playoff run, or do we start them and hang on to that chance of getting a higher seed than the sixth seed?
If you get a shot to get the number two seed, I think you play for it, and then you rest guys later. What's your thoughts, Jeff?
Well, I was the one that wrote the article. There's a lot that needs to take place, and unfortunately, it's not going to be set up for them after week 16. They need a couple things to happen in week 16, especially in the Cincinnati and Denver game. If that pans out the way that they hope, then they still need some things to happen in week 17. So Pittsburgh's going to enter week 17 not really having any grip on whether they would get the two seed or not. It's so far-fetched, but yet, like you said, anything is possible. And in the article I wrote, it was in 2013, they needed all these different scenarios to take place for them to make the postseason. They were 8-8. They had beaten Cleveland in the last week of the year, and they were a 42-yard Ryan suck-up field goal away from actually having that whole thing come to fruition. And then he misses, and they missed the playoffs. But still, they would have to play their starters and have to win in week 17 to make sure that if they are eligible for that number two seed, if the scenarios do pan out the way that they can or should or possibly could, then they would still have to play them. I think the ideal situation for Pittsburgh is maybe even in both of these games, you get a big enough lead that you can actually take some of these players out, like D'Angelo Williams, Ben Roethlisberger, Lawrence Timmons, and some Mike Mitchell, who's nursing a shoulder injury, and get some of those guys some rest if you can, if you're talking about an ideal situation. But in terms of scenarios, yeah, it would be a two-week scenario. If Kansas City somehow trips up and loses, well, now you're looking at a five seed. I think the five seed's more realistic. We're going to talk about that a little later on in the show. But do you have anything else before we let you go?
Nope, that's it. Thanks for taking my call, and have a happy holidays and a happy new year.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. We appreciate it. All right, good caller there. Let's see if we can follow that up with another good one here. Lance, let's get this next caller on the air, 407-864. You're on with Jeff and Lance. Go ahead.
Good evening. This is Dan in Orlando.
Hey, Dan.
What's up,
how's it going?
Are you guys? I'm great. How are you?
Good. Great. Can't complain.
Yeah, so my question was mostly this, like, you guys are much better at football analysis than I am. You've maybe watched the game at least once more since Sunday. And so my question is, was there a schematic change on defense? Like, what did, like, I mean, if there was, like, you know, huge props to Keith Butler, or was it, like, maybe just a small change, but just, like, a whole lot of just, like, extra motivation and heart from the guys that really wanted to pull out the win?
From my look at it, I took a look at the All-22 the last couple of days. I mean, one thing, you know, they played dime first half, both halves. You know, I was trying to discern what particular personnel grouping they played dime against, and, you know, why they played dime as opposed to nickel, because they played both dime and nickel against three wide receiver sets. So, you know, I thought that maybe the difference was when they put in Owen Davis as opposed to Vernon Davis, that they played dime. I wasn't able to, you know, study it long enough to determine that. But honestly, there wasn't really any schematic differences. I think the difference is simply what Tomlin said. They played better. They played with a much greater sense of urgency. And really, the defensive linemen really got after it too, and Hayward. And it was almost an addition by subtraction, sort of because Denver really didn't stay committed to the running game and really passed the ball heavily in the second half. It allowed them to keep Blake off the field and put their best collection of defensive players as well as secondary people on the field during the second half. So I think some game circumstances and them playing just with a greater sense of urgency was what we saw that was different and the key to the comeback.
Yeah, I mean, right. To piggyback on what Lance said, I mean, if you watch the game again, even if not from the All-22, so you recorded the game and you're just watching it again, like I do every week, you know, you see that these players, you watch them on the sideline, they're talking to each other, and you listen to these guys. And what I like about the Steelers team is they don't give you the BS tagline too many times when they're asked questions after a game. And on this 2-day player, defensively, when they asked them what went wrong, they didn't say that, well, Coach Butler put in all these new plays, or we changed our scheme, or we inserted Brandon Boykin, and all of a sudden all was right with the world. It was just Ryan Chazier. See, we weren't talking. We weren't communicating well. We were. Arthur Moat said there was a play, I want to say it was the Emmanuel Sanders 61-yard touchdown, where he said we're supposed to have five back in coverage, and next thing you know, we've got eight rushing, and it's just those numbers don't add up. Someone's making a huge mistake, and the mistakes cost them in the first half. So in the second half, maybe Keith Butler eliminates some of the schemes that they were working on leading up to the game and simplifies things. If that's the case, kudos to him. But ultimately, I think like what Lance said and what Coach Tomlin said and what all the players echoed in the locker room was they just played better football in the second half. And the scary thing is that a team that with championship caliber talent on the offensive side of the football, you look at the defensive side and you say, You can't be this inconsistent if you want to win and you want to win a championship. And so that's kind of scary in a big game, big situation like they had. But that's the way I saw it, at least. I think Lance agreed with me.
Yeah, that's the problem going forward for all Steelers fans looking at this team is the level of inconsistency, the variability in the level of performance. I mean, right now, moving towards the playoffs, you want a consistent level of execution and performance on both sides of the ball. Particularly if you're the coaching staff, you want to be able to hang your hat on it. And there's not anything that you could necessarily hang your hat on the defensive side of football other than the fact that they're going to be inconsistent. So it's how do you manage the level of inconsistency each and every game.
Right.
Well, does that answer your question, Dan?
Thanks. That makes sense. That's enough. Yep. Merry Christmas and a happy Baltimore Hay Week, and hopefully put 40 or 50 on them.
Heck yeah, Dan. Thanks for the phone call, buddy. Appreciate it.
Yep, thanks.
All right. The phone lines are still open, folks. If you're listening, you want to call in, you can. 347-850-851. Again, 347-850-8581. I think I left a number out that last time. been a long week, and we're only halfway through. We have our Hall of Fame caller here waiting, Vito from New Jersey. What's up, Vito?
Gentlemen, good evening. The night before Christmas Eve, how are you all doing?
Doing great, Vito.
I was listening to the question that Lance just answered about the inconsistency. Well, what made the defense rise up to the occasion and pay lights out in the second half of the game against the Broncos? I mean, could you imagine playing with that intensity all game long? Because, you know, it's not easy to do. And even the Broncos, you saw at the second half, their intensity wasn't nearly as good as it was in the first half. I think it's hard to be intense and 100% through the whole game, only because, you know, when you're rushing that pass rusher and if your offense is not getting first downs and it's constant three and outs, now the defense is on the field a long time. Sooner or later, they're going to get worn down. And that's what I think you started to see happening with Denver in the second half when Pittsburgh was putting those drives together. But, you know, so I'll let you handle that question. And going into this game against the Ravens, I'd be shocked if we didn't put 30 points up on the board easily. I mean, this should be an easily won game by Pittsburgh. All they got to do is go out there, focus on what they need to do, and just, you know, take control of the game from the very beginning and just, you know, dismantle this team. I mean, these guys are hurt. Well, they got like 18 players in IR, and I don't even know if there's any real talent on this team at this point in the season. I mean, that's why they're so bad, and they just can't win games anymore. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, Baltimore is going to compete. That's a proud bunch over there. That's a coach that has championship pedigree, and that's a great organization over there. I mean, as Steelers fans, we hate the Ravens, but the Ravens have been successful in the last several years. They play really quality football. They've won a lot of games. It's a veteran bunch over there. So they're going to punch back for as long as they can. And if the Steelers continue to turn over the football in some key situations and Ben Roethlisberger makes a mistake that he has in the 50 or more throw games, then Baltimore will have a chance. If the Steelers play a very clean football game, Baltimore will probably have no chance. I mean, they can still get after the quarterback okay. You still have to block the Williams kid in the interior. But Baltimore just doesn't have the talent right now on both sides of the ball, particularly with a Jimmy Clausen playing quarterback, to be able to beat the Steelers at this point. Can it happen? Absolutely. It's the National Football League. As far as the Denver game, give credit to Denver. They played some quality football early. They were really doing some nice things. The Steelers weren't executing, but part of that lack of execution had to do with what the Broncos were doing. They were blocking it up pretty well, and they had two quality wide receivers in Sanders and Thomas. Demaryius Thomas could go out there and make plays, and Osweiler was poised and had it flowing, and the momentum swung their way. So kudos to them. You know, they helped make some of the mistakes or helped cause some of the mistakes the Steelers were having, but luckily the Steelers, with that supernatural offense, was able to make just enough plays in the second half, and that momentum switched, and they were able to get the game. But, yeah, I think to your point, you know, it's hard to necessarily come out and play with that level of intensity, but I think the reason it is, particularly for the Steelers' defense, is they're just not very talented on the defensive side of football in certain areas. So it's really hard to play at a high level. Regardless of if you want to or not, there are some players that can be exploited on the back end in particular.
Yeah, to kind of jump in here for a second, I would say that when looking at the Baltimore game, this is a great opportunity for Pittsburgh. And I don't say that just as the players, but I think for Coach Tomlin as well. And the knock on Tomlin, everyone's heard it if you've been around social media in the past probably 3, 4, maybe even 5 years, is, you know, they always slip up against a subpar team. And I think you saw, I'm looking for a performance minus the start of the game, like you saw against the Indianapolis Colts in week 13. You know, obviously Jacoby Jones fumbled the opening kickoff, and then D'Angelo Williams puts the ball on the turf, and it was just really ugly start. Other than that, it was complete dominance by Pittsburgh on both sides of the football. When you play a team like the Baltimore Ravens, and I think that number of the injured reserve, Vito, is up to 19 now because they just put Crockett Gilmore on the injured reserve list. They're just so beat up. There's so many players. I don't even know half the players that are on the field anymore for them. And it should be a chance for the Steelers to go out, prove that they are not going to let a subpar team even hang around. Look at what Kansas City did to them last week, 34-14. Alex Smith was wearing a ball cap by the fourth quarter. That's what I want to see from Pittsburgh going into this week. But to go back to your original question, Vito, about the defense, I think that what's important here is and I think is a challenge for the Steelers defensively, is that can they just make enough stops to get the offense more possessions? And you didn't see that in the first half of that Denver game. And you were right. The offense, the Steelers' offense is going to score points, but like you said, they wore down the Denver defense. You could see it. Antonio Brown, every time he went out for a pass and caught it, you just saw them just grinding them down, and just it was awesome to watch as a Steelers fan. But at the same time, you have to look at the other side of the ball and say, okay, now Pittsburgh's defense, there was a point where they had allowed allowed them to score in four straight possessions. That can't happen. You have to cause them to punt. You have to get a turnover. They got those in the second half. You give Pittsburgh's offense more possessions, they're going to win the football game. I just don't think there's many teams that can outscore Pittsburgh in the National Football League, let alone the AFC. So I think you're spot on, though. I mean, the Pittsburgh offense wears down teams if you give them the time and give them the possessions. Even if they don't, doesn't equate to points, the Steelers rarely, or the last few games, have rarely gone 3-and-out. It might have happened a time or two throughout a game, but for the most part, they're going to string together some first downs. They're going to cause that defense to stay on the field, and they're going to eventually get their points. But Vito, to kind of stand by what you said, I think they should easily be able to put up 30 if everyone stays healthy. Those that are superstitious, I just knocked on wood. If they stay healthy, I don't see any reason why they wouldn't be able to hang up 30 and move that streak from 6 games to 7.
Sounds good.
Anything
right?
else, Vito, before we let you go?
Yeah, another thing. I mean, the only real good pass rusher they have left now is, I'm trying to think of the gentleman's name that they have on the team.
Gilmerville.
There you go. He's their really only good guy left. I mean, because they lost Suggs. I mean, I'm thinking if we were able to handle the great pass rushers last week on Denver, we shouldn't have a tough time against this guy, because it's only really one guy that we got to focus on. I think Gilbert's been doing a very good job of handling zone. Their front seven can't be that good right now. I mean, like you said, these guys, a lot of them are injured. They don't have much talent out there. They really don't. I think this is one of those games where we probably run the ball a lot more, because, you know, we've gotten away from that. That way Ben can only throw it 25, 30 times. There's no need for us to go out there and throw it 40, 50 times. He doesn't have to do that all the time. You know, we should be able to be more than one-dimensional here, and, you know, I'm sure we're going to be able to break some good runs. I mean, I don't think these guys are good at stopping the run. Not this team, not the position they're in right now. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, it's a game they should win. I mean, Baltimore's not a good team. They're surging at the moment. They should win. I mean, it's not more complex than that. They handle their business. They don't turn the ball over. They go and get it done. I mean, this is what the expectation is and what it should be come Sunday. May it not happen? Sure. But if this is a team with championship aspirations, they go out and handle their business in the last 2 weeks, and they're dancing in the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, this should be, like you said, a game that you just put them away. I mean, let's be honest. You put them away. Put him away early. I want to see Roethlisberger wearing his toboggan or winter cap, whatever you want to call it. And I want this to be a very smooth game to watch. I want this to be a Christmas gift for all Steeler fans to be able to sit back and enjoy them, just beat them to a pulp. I think the last thing you have to do is you don't want to give them any hope early in the game. And the first quarter is going to be really important that the Steelers get points, cause them to get out of their comfort zone, don't allow them to try to run the football. And that's going to be the challenge for this team, and we'll see how they handle it. I like the Steelers, and obviously we'll get to our predictions later in the show. But, this should be a game where, honestly, the Steelers should take control and not release that control. I'm looking forward to this weekend, Vito. I'm sure you are too, right?
Yeah, it should be. I think they're focused. They know what they need to do. I don't think you're going to get a letdown like you did last year, where they went into New Jersey against the Jets and they looked bad. And, you know, even though they looked bad, they only lost by a touchdown that game. So that game, even with the mistakes they made, I think they were a play away from tying the game. So I think they know what their focus is here. They know what they need to do. They've been hot. I don't see them getting cold. And I think last week when Mr. Coulon was there, I said to him, I had a feeling that Pittsburgh was going to be able to pull off the Denver game. If you remember, I did say that. I said, I have a hunch that they're going to do what they need to do to win this game. It's not going to be an easy game. It's going to be a tough game, but they're going to find a way. So everything is about finding a way. So even if they play a little sloppy, this is not a team that's going to be able to go toe-to-toe with them and put up 30 points. I don't see that happening. So, this, you know, Denver had them by 17, and we came back against the number one defense, and you know, we scored over 30 points. You're talking about a team that's half as good as the one we faced last week. So I don't know how that's going to happen. We have to throw an interception every possession we have for that team to even get up 21 points. Correct me if I'm wrong. I don't think that's going to happen. Well, I don't think they have the playmakers to do that.
Yeah, let's hope that doesn't happen. And to, you know, piggyback on what you and Lance have said, this is the Steelers game to be had, and if they let this one slip away, they are not worthy of the postseason. They're not worthy of championship aspirations. And so we'll see how things pan out on Sunday. Vito, as always, we thank you for the phone call, brother. Have a happy holiday, okay?
You too, you and your family. Thank you much. All the best to you guys.
All right, no problem. Hey, same to you. Lance, real quick before we go to our next caller, some of the numbers for this Ravens matchup. Offensive output, points per game, Steelers are averaging 27, Baltimore 20.9. Points allowed per game, Steelers 20.5, Baltimore 25.7. Total yards, Steelers are averaging 416 yards a game. Goodness gracious, that's insane. Steelers are averaging 303 yards passing a game, 113 yards rushing a game. Defensively, the Ravens are giving up 255 yards rushing and 100 yards on the ground. So, we're going to get more in-depth on this matchup here in the next few minutes. Let's get our next caller on the air. If anyone wants to call in, they can. Phone lines are still open, 347-850-8581. Again, 347-850-8581. 347-406, you're on with Jeff and Lance. Go ahead.
Fellas, what's good? This is Bryce calling from Brooklyn.
BK! Bryce, what's happening, man?
What's going on, fellas? What's going on? Y'all ready for the holidays?
They are absolutely here. If I'm not ready, but I think I am ready.
It's funny that the holidays are coming up, and the Steelers got two big Hollywood breaks catching the Ravens and the Browns at this time. So, you know, those are good things.
Much better than having the Patriots and the Bills. So schedule makers were kind. And it kind of worked out in the Steelers' favor going down the stretch because I think, and that's why it's so difficult when you look at schedules and you try to predict what's going to happen. You know, when you saw the schedule when it was made, when you saw Seattle, you saw Denver, you saw Indianapolis, you saw Cincinnati, you know, I don't think anyone predicted that the Steelers would win, you know, three of those games. Particularly that three-game stretch with Indy, Cincy, and Denver. I don't think anyone thought they would win all three of those games. So it kind of just worked out. No Luck, no Manning. You win those games. It just happens that way. And you just take them and you don't complain. You stack them up. Hopefully you have enough to get to the dance.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely broke right. You know, when you compare the schedules between, like you just brought up, between the Jets and the Chiefs and the Steelers for the last two games, we're playing the worst schedule because of what's going on with the Browns and what's going on with the Ravens. You know, I want to focus on something that Jeff, you said, you asked me a couple weeks ago after we lost to Seattle. You said, can this Seattle game, Bryce, be a catalyst for the team? And I agreed with you 100%, and it has been. And I think this second half of the Denver game, this needs to be a catalyst for our defense specifically. And I think going into the Ravens game, and not to get too far ahead into the Browns game, when you look at those two offenses, these are two games where, you know, we know what the quarterback's going to bring. We know what Ben's going to bring. He's Ben. We expect that. You know, we don't want to take it for granted, but we expect it. We need to see this defense the past 2 weeks, the next 2 weeks, rather, really come out starting this week in Baltimore against this offense. They got 5 sacks against Baltimore last time. We need to see this front seven really dominate. Particularly, I want to see the outside linebackers, whatever rotation you talk about, I want to see them really whip these tackles this week. I want to see them get after whoever's at quarterback and make it very uncomfortable. These next two games, these need to be a combined 10 to 13 sack games where we're really coming out and just dominating in the trenches and making it tough on these guys, even if the offense is moving the ball, where the defense is really using that second half of Denver as a catalyst. What do you guys think?
I agree. And it's funny you talk about catalyst, or as some analysts say, get right games. It's very interesting that you mentioned that, because in fact, when you look at the Seattle game and the Pittsburgh game, it was actually a get right or a catalyst game for both offenses.
Right.
You see what Seattle has done since. You know, Russell Wilson has just played fantastic. He's played the best football of his life.
Yeah.
And I think the Steelers knew that they were a passing team, that they were going to hang their hat in the passing game first. But I think the Seattle game, being able to go up there on the road, further cemented that. And now they go into every game with the thought, we're going to pass it at least 40 times and put a lot of pressure on every secondary, because we know they can't handle our passing game. We're going to pass it first, run to set up the pass, pass to set up the run. That's how we're going to roll. Ben's going to throw it 45-plus times. D'Angelo's going to carry it anywhere between 10 to 20 times. But I think you hit a great point. On the defensive side, hopefully this is the catalyst game for this defense to start getting more consistent performances. And if it can be, and if it serves to be that, then the Steelers are truly a team that nobody wants to play come playoff time.
Yeah, it's when I look at, you know, it's funny, when I look at our outside guys, and you know, we've got the rotation going, and they've been pretty good, but not outstanding by any stretch of the imagination. Against these two offenses, it's time for them to take that second half, bottle that up against Denver, and really come out as a defense and dominate these offenses. I mean, these are two games where you can really get on a roll and really build some nice momentum, continue some momentum, I should say, going into a playoff run. I think we need to see that from this defense.
Well, you know, to talk about consistency, and I've said this all season, is the consistency lies within the front seven. When they get after the passer, that whole defense changes shape. The cornerbacks are allowed to play tighter to the line of scrimmage. They're able to be more aggressive. They know that the football is not going to be able to get out on time. If it is, it's going to be a wayward pass. And I ask you this, Bryce. I like to ask you questions as you're a very knowledgeable caller. When was I can only think of one game. When was the last game the Pittsburgh Steelers defense absolutely stifled their opponent and left no doubt at all from start to finish? I can think of one game.
Man, I mean, I guess if you want to use that Colts game, maybe that one, maybe the Browns game, maybe, or
that
the 49ers.
I would say maybe, I'll give you 49ers, I was going to say the Colts, and looking more recent history. And you look at Cleveland, and yeah, they only gave up 9 points, but they allowed a lot of yardage. The Colts didn't allow a lot of yardage. They were a very good team. And this is a team that is 40 sacks. Now, you do a quick Google search, and you'll see that they've already surpassed their last 2 years with two games left against really crappy teams in terms of getting after the quarterback. I want to see a more consistent pass rush from this team. Right. Everyone wants to talk about the secondary, but the secondary is not going to get markedly better. I want to see Bud Dupree get a sack again. I mean, a lot of people are saying he's hit that rookie wall. He admitted he's never played 14 games in his life. And now he's going into his 15th game. And so he's like, okay, is he going to be able to get to the quarterback? He has 4 sacks. Everyone thought heck, maybe this kid can get to double digits, hasn't been around the quarterback that much in recent weeks. Is that James Harrison going to be able to get up? What about Jarvis Jones? Is he going to ever get to the quarterback? And Arthur Motes is the same question. I think that's where this consistency issue lies with this defense. I think Butler, especially in these last 2 weeks, needs to just let it rip. I'm talking about blitzing Shazier more, blitzing Timmons more, letting those edge rushers really try to get after the quarterback, especially against teams like Baltimore that don't have good tackles. Let them get after the quarterback. I don't care if it's Matt Schaub, Jimmy Clausen, or Ryan Mallett, if they want to play him after they just signed him. To me, the consistency lies in the front seven. Now, Lance, you might disagree, but that's just my take on it. I think this team, Ryan, lives and dies by that front seven. If you look at the history of this team this year, when offenses have picked them apart, they have not gotten to the quarterback. They've allowed them to sit in the pocket. Look at what Russell Wilson did in Week 12, and that's what happened. Look at the first half in Week 15 against the Denver Broncos. Osweiler had all the time in the world. He was able to have it real smooth. His back foot was hitting, and he was getting timing throws. That's the worst possible scenario for this team. They need to get better pressure and better consistency from their front seven. That's my opinion, though.
I would agree, Jeff. I think it hinges on the front seven, particularly Tuitt and Hayward. When they're rolling and they're on fire, this defense plays well. I mean, when you have a secondary that puts out corners like Boykin, Blake, Cockrell, and Gay, I mean, you know, throw them up in the air, 52-card, you know, 52-pickup, throw them and put any combination out there, there's going to be some consistency because none of those guys are elite players. So, again, I think you're right. It's up to the front seven to get it done. How they play is how this defense plays.
You know, just going back to what Jeff said, and I think on our calls, we haven't singled them out that much because we have talked about, you know, you need to get the pass rush. But, Jeff, you're spot on. I mean, it's time to put the highlight, particularly with these two games coming up. It's time to highlight these outside linebackers. I mean, they need to show up and dominate these tackles. I mean, we need to see that. Now, granted, Joe Thomas, you're not going to have a lot of people dominating Joe Thomas. But we need to see consistent pressure from these guys. I mean, now you've got the ends. The ends are a different breed than what we've had. They're one gapping. They're getting after people. Now that you've got that, we need these outside rushers to really step up and kind of use that second half as a catalyst to really get after people. And I agree with you. Keith Butler needs to let it go, send these guys, and just really put pressure on the next two teams we play, because we've gone against offensive linemen with injuries this year, and I don't feel we've dominated in terms of the outside linebackers as much as we should. I mean, 40 sacks is okay, but really up from what you said, like our sack totals have gone up because they were so bad in the past. We need to use that second half against Denver as a catalyst to really get going.
Yeah, I mean, I look at a couple things. You just want to make the quarterback uncomfortable. The sacks are going to come, but quarterback hits and quarterback hurries are more, almost more important statistics, in my opinion, than actually sack totals. Because if you're making a quarterback have to flush him out of the pocket and you're eliminating half of the field, or if you're he's not able to have those timing patterns in his repertoire or in his arsenal, then you're doing your job. And so I think that the Steelers as a whole, and this is where Keith Butler might say, you know what, let's just let it go, because we give up a ton of yards through the year anyway. And so you're obviously, if you're going by, we're going to try to keep coverage and all that stuff, if you're giving up a ton of yards anyway, then you might as well try to almost have that live or die by the blitz mentality. And honestly, could it get worse in the secondary than what it already is? I mean, they've given up a significant amount of yardage all year, and now they're giving up more points. And so I think you look at it and say, well, we got to get after the quarterback. So let them loose and see what you have, because Dupree, maybe he's not ready, but you're going to have to test him sooner or later. I think now's the time.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with that. You know, on the back end, real quick, even though we've talked about it, it's so painfully obvious that the combination of corners that do the best for us is Cockrell, and Gay on the outside with Boykin at the slot. I mean, and Blake playing in spot duty. I don't understand why Tomlin is so enamored with Antoine Blake right now, particularly since we can tell he's not fully healthy, and it's affected his tackling. I don't know what he's got, you know, what he sees in that, but the combination of Cockrell and Gay and Blake are clearly the best corners that we have. And you put them out there, you kind of let them go, and you really focus on that front seven coming, just like you said.
Yeah, I mean, Lance, I know you want to talk about these guys today and the rotation and what you think of that. I mean, what are your thoughts on how they're deploying the rotation with usage of Brandon Boykin?
Well, I mean, when we talk about, you know, the controversy as to Boykin turns, you know, all year about Boykin. And I think some Steelers fans, I think, have it confused. When you're talking about Boykin or Blake playing, it's not swapping one for the other.
Right.
When you're talking about Blake playing, it's between Blake and Cockrell.
And Cockrell, you know, right.
You know, those are the outside corners. I know you know this because you're a, you know, well-informed caller and well-informed fan. So I think the reason why you see Blake play more or you see Blake play at all is Blake is merely the base defensive cornerback. So if a team plays more two tight end sets, the Steelers are going to match up to it in base defense, and you're going to see Blake.
Okay.
If the game situation dictates where teams go to more three wide receiver personnel groupings or four wide receiver groupings, you're going to see nickel and or dime, and then you're not going to see Blake play. What I've seen over the last few weeks is Blake doesn't play in those combinations. Because what I saw in the Denver game is when the Steelers went to dime, they played three safeties and three corners and didn't put Blake on the field.
Right.
In their secondary, the only two guys that are going to play all the time is going to be Gay and it's going to be Mitchell. But I think the problem is going to sort of solve itself because if the Steelers' offense continues to be as hot as it is and they score like it, they're going to be playing more nickel anyway.
Right.
And Blake is not going to be playing on the field. So it's going to kind of take care of itself. My question to Tomlin would be, why don't you just make Cockrell, you know, the corner that plays in base and in nickel situations? Why don't you just give him the additional snaps?
Right.
Because I think Cockrell is the better player, and you might play Blake in spot duty in base to give Cockrell a blow. So that would be my question to Tomlin and the staff. But, you know, the more teams play, the more they score and teams have to play catch-up, you know, you're going to see less Blake, and that's going to be better for that defense overall.
You know, absolutely. I mean, I believe you're spot on with that. And even if we play devil's advocate with ourselves and said, okay, well, you know, the narrative is, well, Boykin and Cockrell may not be as aggressive in the run game. Well, A, we know or we see, our eyes are telling us that Blake is dealing with some type of injury that has strongly affected his ability to tackle aggressively. So he's whiffing a lot out there. So they're losing it in that. And then I'll just tell you from my perspective, and I guess, Lance, you and Jeff see the film, the All-22 or what have you. I don't see that. But when I watch, I see Cockrell and Boykin very feisty in the run game. I mean, they're not super physical guys, but they will come up and they will challenge ball carriers. I have not seen them, you know, shying away from that. So I'm not sure why the staff has that narrative of what they're seeing, because I see a guy in Cockrell who can come in base, and if you're going to run, he's going to stick his nose up in there because, you know, he's a competitor. He will compete. And I've seen Boykin stick his nose up there too. So I'm not sure where they're getting that narrative from.
You know, it's just, it's definitely been interesting. It's definitely been interesting this year with that.
Yeah. I mean, Jeff, yeah. I thought you were going to say something.
No, it's just some of these narratives that are going around. I mean, we're in week 16, and a lot isn't going to change. I mean, this is the team, you know, and people want to talk about the, you know, depth of positions and Boykin and Blake and Cockrell, and you know, you're right. You talk about run support and tackling. That's all very important. But at the same time, I think that, you know, a lot of people, and myself included, would love to see Tomlin maybe make some shuffles and changes. But I think the coaching staff is like, look, these are our guys, you know. They've got us this far. We're going to ride it until the wheels fall off, you know, to use one of the terms that Tomlin said about Willie Parker back a few years ago. But I just think that, you know, some of these fan narratives that are, you know, being tossed around are sometimes just really ridiculous. But, you know, all great points at the same time. Do you have anything else before we let you go, or are you good?
Well, just two quick things. One, about Cockrell and Boykin and Gay. You know, one thing we are seeing, and I think we saw it last week, is that those three guys, I think, are a little better than people give credit for, particularly William Gay. I mean, if you would have told me William Gay would be this consistent a few years ago, I would have laughed at you. Like, because I didn't think he was terrible, but I'm like, he just doesn't really possess that it thing. This guy has become a complete football player. He's not overly great at anything, but he's very consistent. And I think Boykin's a guy that has shown on paper he can cover guys, and Cockrell is a guy that can run with you when he's got some length. So I think the answers actually are in that room, you know, that saying where there's some upside to Cockrell and Boykin, and we know we're getting from Gay, that if we just put those guys out there, let them run with some receivers, play a little closer, and mix up more man coverage, we might have a chance to take down some of this yard stuff. The second thing I wanted to say real quick is offensively, what I love about Pittsburgh is people want to talk about the second half a lot. I like to focus on the end of the second quarter when they put that drive together and got that field goal. And I'm like, you know what? That shows me this is an offense. If you give them – if you get up, cool. But if you give them a crack and they start getting going, 14 points being down is nothing to them. That doesn't mean anything. So that puts a lot of pressure on the opposing offense to have to really keep up. And maybe that can even force them into making mistakes and rushing and hurrying.
Yeah, I would agree about that. Gay has definitely been a surprise. But I think moving forward, I think this football team is close. But moving forward, I think ideally you would like Gay to be your second and or third corner.
Right.
I think they still moving forward need a premier player at the position to bump guys down. But, you know, if you play cover three and cover two, I mean, you're not – if you don't play a lot of man coverage, they might not necessarily pay a corner. You're not going to pay a corner necessarily – well, I'll take that back. Richard Sherman gets paid a lot to play zone. But, you know, but typically, you know, zone corners aren't going to get paid like man guys. I don't know if they're going to be a man team anytime soon, but, you know, but it would be nice to have guys that have that versatility.
You know,
yeah.
Bryce, I'll say this. I'm glad that you brought up that final drive of the first half, because there's two plays that happen relatively close to one another that no one's – or I should say a play is in a drive that no one's talking about because of the result in the second half of the Steelers is the missed McManus extra point, okay, which led them to have 27 points. It was 27-10. Pittsburgh gets the ball down in the first half. They drive down. They get a field goal. Now they're down 27-13. Two-score game. Pittsburgh has that in the bag, and they prove that they do because, obviously, their offense is so prolific and dynamic. Those are big swings. Those are momentum swings. And like you said, Roethlisberger has proven throughout his entire career that he can move the ball with between the 20s, I would say, almost better than any quarterback in the league. His main issues are in the red zone. Whether he can get the football into the end zone. And, hey, he did a great job with that. But he and Antonio Brown, I mean, the chemistry these two guys have is borderline ridiculous, because if you watch even the first touchdown pass, which we highlighted on our game-changing plays film room today on Behind the Steel Curtain, it's just insane what these guys can do and then how in tune they are with one another. But those are really good points. That I often forget based on the fact of the outcome of the game. But at the same time, I look at it and say, the missed extra point and then the field goal makes it a two-score game. And I think Pittsburgh's going into halftime saying, two scores, we can do this if the defense can just stop them, and that's exactly what happens. Those are very good points.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, sorry, just one thing Lance kind of sparked. Don't let me get it twisted, my dude. I'm definitely one of the people to say after the season, you know, I know we have a philosophy on corners. We love to play the zone. I get it. I'm not against the zone. But with the way they make you play defense nowadays, we have to continue to adjust our philosophy. I'm one of these guys. So we got to go out. If it's Golson, I don't know. But we got to go out and find corners that are a little bit of a different level. I mean, you got to be able to reroute these guys, pattern read, and get these guys out of their spots. So I'm definitely for that. But I do see some potential in what they already have in the room if we allow them, if we mix it in some of that man like we did against Denver and allow them to run with these guys and play a little closer. I feel we can benefit from that.
Lance, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm here, absolutely. I'm definitely here. Yeah. All great points. All great points. We're going to go ahead and move on. Happy holidays to you, sir.
Yes. Same to you guys. Have a good holiday.
Hey, see you, Bryce. Thanks for the call. All right, Lance, let's get back to our whips. When we had a lot of callers today. That's a good thing. If you want to still call in, you can. 347-850-8581. Again, 347-850-8581. The phone lines are open. We have some time now. I want to ask you about something that a caller brought up earlier, and this is before we get into our keys to victory for the Ravens, and then we'll give you predictions that should be all for our show tonight, but playoff scenarios. Now, Lance, obviously, I'm sure you know, if they win Sunday, they clinch a playoff spot, and they would be the sixth seed, depending on the outcome of the Kansas City game. But there's a very strong chance that this team could finish at the fifth seed, as well as another caller said earlier, possibly the number two seed. Now, I don't know if you saw the article that I posted today on the website. The number two seed scenario is rather they need so many teams that are just really, really awful to pull off upsets. Like they would need Cleveland to beat Kansas City or Kansas City to lose to Oakland, one or the other. They would need San Diego to beat Denver in Week 17. They would need the Bengals to lose to the Ravens in Week 17. I'm going to go ahead out on a limb, and this is not much of a limb, and say that's not going to happen. But I do think this team has a legitimate shot at being the fifth seed, and I think that could be a prime real estate spot for this Pittsburgh Steelers team because, as you know, the fifth seed is going to be playing that AFC South champion, which looks like it's going to be Houston Texans. Is there a path for this AFC playoffs? Now, this is assuming that Pittsburgh makes the dance, that they get a ticket. Assuming that they do, is there a path that you would rather see them take? Or are you at the point where you say, you know what, set them up, we're going to knock them down, it doesn't matter who it is?
The path that gives you the Patriots in the AFC Championship game is the best path, or a path that, you know, you don't get the Patriots, hopefully they lose. If you have to play the Patriots in the playoffs, you want to play them with the opportunity to go to the Super Bowl. You don't want to play them, and then you have to play another playoff game. Because it would suck if you beat the Patriots in the divisional round, then you have to go play another game. If you beat the Patriots in the playoffs, you either want to go to the Super Bowl or you want to win the Super Bowl. In this case, for the Steelers being the AFC, it's to go to the Super Bowl. So I believe if they're the five seed, they won't see the Patriots until the AFC Championship. Am I correct?
Well, it would depend. It would depend on the outcome of the other wild card game, because New England would play the lowest seeded team in the divisional round.
Right. That would be.
So if New England ends up winning, and they are the number one seed, which looks likely, let's be honest. Then if Pittsburgh is the five seed and the six seed could be anywhere from Denver to Kansas City to even the New York Jets still, then if the six seed wins, then they would play them.
Right,
but if the three seed beats them, then the Steelers would have to go to Gillette Stadium in the divisional round. So it all depends on that first round.
Right. So I'm of the mindset that I think that Cincinnati beats Denver on Monday night.
And I think Cincinnati is going to get the 2 seed. I think Cincinnati is going to get the 2 seed. And correct me if I'm wrong, Denver loses Monday, and Kansas City wins out. Will Kansas City win the West?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, they will. And that's the scenario that's going to put Pittsburgh in the five spot.
I think that's going to happen. You know, I think that's going to happen. And the Steelers are going to get the 5 seed and be able to play that AFC South winner, which I think they put the smack down on.
Right. Yeah. I've got the tool right here. It depends on obviously the matchups, but if the Pittsburgh Steelers win Sunday, they clinch their spot, all that good stuff. If Kansas City beats Cleveland, and then you said, which is it, Cincinnati wins? Is that what you said?
Cincinnati.
You're picking Cincinnati? Cincinnati wins, they stay in the 2 seed. Now Denver becomes the 6 seed, as Kansas City is the 3rd. Now this is where it gets really interesting, is let's say that holds true, and the first round of the playoffs is the buys are number 1 seed New England, number 2 seed Cincinnati. The wild card games would be Denver at Kansas City and Pittsburgh at Houston. So you like that matchup, and you like the fact that Denver is going to go into Kansas City, and you have to say that Denver could beat Kansas City, and then Denver would have to go to New England, and Pittsburgh would be at a rematch with Cincinnati in the divisional round. So all I'm saying is a lot of stuff could happen. I said it on the website, I wrote it in the article, the teams might basically be decided, but that's it in terms of that. I mean, there's a lot of juggling that can still happen. The fact that there's 2 weeks left, and there's even a scenario that I don't care how far-fetched it is, that Pittsburgh could be the number 2 seed and get a first-round bye is ludicrous. It could happen. You never know. I doubt it will. But it's going to be fun to watch, that's for sure. Now, let's get down to the brass tacks, so to speak, about this Ravens game. There's really not much to talk about with this matchup because, like I said earlier, I don't know half of these guys on the team. And I live in Maryland. I'm surrounded by these moron Ravens fans every single day. And I don't know half of these guys. All I know is that last week, those football pants should be outlawed for the rest of eternity. They were the ugliest uniform. Did you see this? Please tell me you saw this.
Yeah, those gold pants. Yeah, those are bad. No, but I'm going to tell you the worst uniform actually in history were the all-yellow Rams uniforms they wore last Thursday when they played the Buccaneers. Those were the worst.
Well, I'll go a step further and say every single Color Rush uniform Nike has put out has been atrocious. And whether it was the Christmas game between the Bills and the Jets where it was all red and all green, or whether it was the Jacksonville Jaguars, which had like an entire gold, it was like if you take the Ravens pants and make every single part of your uniform that color, it's just disgusting. And people keep saying, well, the Steelers, what if the Steelers run a color rush game? I don't think the Steelers would let them do that to their uniforms. But if they did, I would hope it'd be all black. I don't know. But these Ravens, other than Harbaugh, and I said this during Mike Tomlin's press conference on our Behind the Steel Curtain Twitter feed, you know it's bad when he talks about the opposition, and he has every week, and the first thing he talks about is the coaching staff. He didn't talk about one player. He talks about Harbaugh, the coordinators, the consistency the consistency they have there. He didn't name a player for like 3 minutes, and I'm thinking, wow, that's bad. Because I don't care if you have Johnny Snot throwing a football. Most of the time the coach is going to talk about, well, you know, Matt Schaub, he's an accomplished player. He's been in the league, blah, blah, blah. Jimmy Clausen, he's been in this league, blah, blah, blah. Talks about coaches. So, Lance, what are some of the things that you're looking for in this game defensively leading up to the Ravens team game?
Well, you know, Ozzie Newsome over the years has been a fantastic GM. Harbaugh's been a good coach. Ray Lewis was a very good player at one point in time for the Ravens. They've had a great pedigree. As you notice, I'm trying to do like Tomlin and just talk about the crab cakes. Ripken Jr. was very good for the Orioles back in the day. You guys remember the streak? And he played like 5,000 games in a row. You know, Baltimore, the home of the Wire, the HBO series. Clay Davis,
hopefully I did my best imitation of that. We're talking about the game. I have to mention players, defense, what the defense should do. All the defense has to do is get after Clawson, stop the run, put the game in Clawson's hands. And if you get Clawson's pass attempts up around 30, it's a blowout. He'll turn it over multiple times, and the game will be over. Not much here. Stop the run, force Clawson to air it out, turn him over, and get after him. Go home, get to the playoffs, let's get it cracking.
Yeah, that's what it's all about. I mean, people want to talk about trap game. The playoffs are on the line for these guys right now. You win and you're in. You know, then you win this week, and then next week it's just about positioning and trying to get yourself in the best position possible. So I think offensively, if I'm going to give any keys, I want to see D'Angelo Williams run the football. I want to see the offensive line get some push. The last few games they have not been able to do so. D'Angelo Williams, looking at Pro Football Focus, did not get very many yards where they were clean. You know, a lot of it was after contact, really having to make those really difficult jump cuts, not clean holes that you've been seeing him get the last few weeks. I want to see him get back to that, pushing people around. And I want Ben Roethlisberger to continue to be efficient. I mean, you've got the weapons. What I like about it is, yes, some people look at it and say Antonio Brown has 16 targets. That's insane. If he's wide open, why wouldn't you throw him the stupid football? I mean, the guy had 16 catches. Plain and simple, the guy's that good. Roethlisberger's getting the football. He's still spreading it around. I love Martavis Bryant. 10 catches, they were contested, or as Mike Tomlin calls them, combat catches. And Marcus Wheaton is really turning into a great complimentary player. I want to see Heath Miller get more involved. I think that this is a game that the Steelers absolutely annihilate the Ravens. Because think back to week 4 when they played on Thursday Night Football. This was right after Roethlisberger went down with a knee injury. Michael Vick is in. Imagine what that game would have looked like with Roethlisberger under center. Would have been ugly. They would have beaten him by 2 touchdowns. But he wasn't. I understand that. No crying over spilled milk. He's in the lineup now. They're decimated by injury. It's going to be ugly. So, Lance, what's your prediction for this upcoming game?
I like the Steelers to go into Baltimore, handle their business. I think they beat Baltimore. Because it's a divisional game and it's Baltimore, I think they're going to start a little bit slow. I like 35-17, 35-14, somewhere around that tune. I'll go with 35-17, maybe even 35-21. I think they're going to put it on Baltimore, beat them by at least 2 touchdowns.
All right, I see you. Obviously, I like the Steelers to win this game as well. I think that Pittsburgh is going to put it on them. I think that they're going to make an example. They want to prove that the Week 4 game was a fluke. If Josh Scobie wasn't a horrible human being, then they would have won the football game. And so I'm going to say Pittsburgh Steelers 45, Baltimore Ravens 24. I think they're going to get some garbage touchdowns, and I think Pittsburgh's going to have to pack it in. But you remember that Monday night game a couple of years ago when Roethlisberger threw 5 touchdowns in the first half?
Yeah.
That was when Hines Ward absolutely annihilated Ed Reed, and I think he knocked him out of the game with a concussion. I could see a similar output to that in the first half, just really going up big, and it could be a laugher. I mean, that place, M&T Bank is a proud stadium. I've driven by it a million times. You talk to people that have been there. That place is going to be like Hines Field East if this happens the way it is. I know a lot of Steelers fans in the area that they're getting tickets. Ravens fans don't even want to be there. It should be interesting. I'm looking forward to this game basically because I want to see the Steelers absolutely annihilate this team. I live in Maryland, you know. Like the only benefit is the crab cakes, like you talked about. Other than that, taxes are too high. This place isn't fun. So the only thing I can cling to is when the Steelers beat the Ravens, and I hope that happens on Sunday. Anything else, Lance, before we call it a show, before we break for Christmas? What's going on?
Two things. One thing I do want to see in this game, I don't want to see any interceptions by Ben. That's one thing on a football note. On a Steeler historical note, today is the anniversary of, I believe, the Immaculate Reception. So that's a little tip for you Steeler fans out there. And last but not least, again, happy holidays to all of you. And keep rocking with the Steeler Nation. Thank you for your support for the show. Make sure you guys bring it in safely. We don't want to hear any bad news about anything happening to any of you guys. So go light on the eggnog, and if you want to go heavy on the eggnog, stay in the house and act the fool in the confines of your house. So you can act the fool in your house. Don't go outside after the fool and drive it drunk and all that bad stuff, I should say. Stay safe. Bring the holidays in safe. And just have a fantastic time and appreciate your family. We'd love to support you guys. Give to us in this show because it's a labor of love for us. And hopefully you guys continue to enjoy it.
Absolutely. Couldn't have said it better myself. We hope that everyone has a great holiday. But, hey, the Steelers are not going to be taking time off, and neither will I. As the editor of BehindTheSteelCurtain.com, make sure you check out the website. We're going to have a lot of film room breakdowns for you on there, as well as all the latest news on the black and gold leading up to Ravens Hate Week, the Baltimore Ravens game at M&T Bank Stadium on Sunday in Week 16. They can clinch a playoff spot. Should be worth watching at 1 o'clock. Remember, that game was flexed out. If you have an old schedule, it might say 8:20. It's not. It's a 1 o'clock game. And make sure you join myself and Chris Carter after the game for the Steelers Final Score postgame podcast. Lance, have a Merry Christmas, my friend. I appreciate all the work you do for us with the podcast.
You too, sir.
Be safe out there on the West Coast. And absolutely, we'll see you next week as we get ready for the Browns. Hopefully the Steelers have clinched a playoff spot. And as we always say, go Steelers. We'll see you later.
Go Steelers.